Show.
Great. Okay, good morning. Tuesday, March 25th, 2025. And oh, I just wanted to say, I knew there was something I was just thinking. I just yesterday caught up with all the previous recordings of the class, put them all out there, and now they are available as a podcast, and they are also on YouTube. So if you really want to watch this, which is not the most entertaining visual experience, but hey, each to their own. Some people get thrills from staring at, the Yuletide fire, or the Yule, what is that thing? The Yule log. Anyway, welcome. And we'll start with a period of meditation, about 20 minutes, and then I have some thoughts to share. And usually there's some time at the end for people to ask questions or comment. So let's start with sitting. And so settling back into a comfortable meditation posture. Just allowing the body to soften, coming into stillness. You can close your eyes or just lower your gaze. Taking some time just to let the body find its comfort zone and to relax a bit. Rather than deeper breaths, I like to just make longer breaths. So just slowing the inhalation and exhalation, and that might make them deeper, but you're not straining to do that. Just using the breath as a calming device, a way to help the body and mind to settle just by slowing down. Letting the attention move through the body. Relaxing any points of tension. And then letting the tension come to rest on the breath itself. This can mean different things. We can work with the breath in different ways, either paying attention to the touch of air entering and leaving the nostrils, or feeling the movement of breath in the chest and belly. However, it's easy for you to bring mindfulness to breathing, to the breath itself. just to be present with this simple, vital physical activity. Natural that thoughts will appear and take our attention away from the breath. And so, our first task in this regard is simply returning to the breath when we realize the mind has wandered. If you can bring some curiosity to the experience of breathing, despite its ordinary quality, it is rarely really investigated or felt. We can discover different elements of what the breath is actually like. In this way, we might be able to stay with the breath. If we instead try to cling to the breath or force the mind to stay with the breath, it just tends to create more tension. But a gentle curiosity can make for a pleasant investigation. So, finding a balance of effort is our challenge. We don't just lie back and snooze. We need to engage. That engagement, though, needs to avoid grasping or striving. And so we pay attention to the quality of effort as well as the breath itself. We attune to the inner feeling that tells us whether we are moving towards something, grasping at it, or pushing something away. One of the great challenges of our practice of meditation, of sitting with yourself, is accepting when things are not calm, when things are not comfortable. With the nature of our lives, the nature of our world, there can be a sense of swirling anxiety, not connected to anything specific, just floating. And even as we try to be mindful or concentrated on the breath, these feelings can make that seem impossible. So we can wind up in a struggle, in a battle with our own feelings, with our own energies in the body, thinking that if we can just meditate properly, that discomfort will go away. But our practice is not to control, but more oriented towards acceptance, investigation. What does this feel like? Can I allow it to be here without pushing it away or judging it, resisting it? This is perhaps the first great challenge of meditation. All right. I was talking a little bit about saying I was doing some writing, and I thought just to talk a little bit about this, when I write about the Dharma and about recovery, it can get dry and technical, and just I don't like to read, books that are just strictly like information or instructions. I like stories, and there are certain things I read just to learn, but those things that are part of my like sort of my training as both a practitioner and especially as a teacher. But my books aren't technical books. They're meant to be read with a certain degree of sort of enjoyment. I guess I like to entertain people in a way, and to keep their attention. In any case, I was taking up the topic of right effort yesterday, and when I do that, it often reminds me that the first sort of formal Dharma talk that I gave was on right effort, and it was in the spring of 1996, so that's 29 years ago, and I had just come back from a retreat down in Joshua Tree with the sort of Spirit Rock team, including Jack Kornfield and Anna Douglas. I think Tara Brach was on that retreat too. And I was regularly going to Westminster Sitting Group Wednesday nights in Berkeley at the First Presbyterian Church, 2929 College Avenue. And it's a distinctive address. It's the only reason I remember it. And after I came back from the retreat, I didn't know Wes well, but I was a regular there, and so I'd get chatted with him, and so I guess he knew I'd been on retreat, and he said, "How was your retreat?" And he said this, in public, in front of the group, probably after the sit, and I said, I said something like, "I was either present or I wasn't." Which made sense to me, and Wes liked it too, and was like, "Oh yeah, that's very good." It was sort of one of those enigmatic, almost Zen-like things. Like, there wasn't really, it was either happening or wasn't. I wasn't really, and I guess that what I was expressing was I wasn't really particularly bothered when I wasn't present. I wasn't struggling, In any case, it was shortly after that that Wes invited me to substitute for him. So I always figured that that answer sort of got his attention and made him think, like, "Oh yeah, this guy could probably give a Dharma talk." But what I chose to talk about was right effort. And what's, funny to me now is that I gave that talk and I didn't know that there was a thing called the Four Great Efforts, which is like the kind of core official teaching on effort from Buddhism. I just didn't even know that. But it was a good talk, and the reason it was a good talk is because I had done a whole lot of meditation before. I mean, I'd already been practicing for 15 years and been on, a dozen retreats, some of them quite long, and so what I talked about, as I often do, it was kind of the, the felt experience, the nitty-gritty of like dealing with trying to be present and not getting caught too much in striving and not getting lazy, and how do you balance those things? And you know, it's I guess partly what I'm getting at is, you know, it can be useful to know the technical lists and definitions of terms in Dharma practice, but it's a practice itself. It's sitting and dealing with the challenges that is that's where you learn. And so generally, to me, the Dharma teachings illuminate the experiences you've already had. And if you haven't had the experiences, the Dharma teachings won't really mean that much, and they won't really necessarily help you exactly to deal with those things. You sort of have to go through it. And then when you get hear the teaching, it's like, yeah, that makes sense. I get that. And then it's kind of like filling it in for you and completing a picture rather than just being like sort of, you know, when you're just learning to practice and your early practice, you kind of have these different pieces of the puzzle, but it doesn't seem to come together wholly. But and it's when you get like the Dharma teachings that fill in that puzzle, if that makes sense. But what I thought I would talk about a little bit is though the kind of the suttas that actually point to what it is that I was talking about in that first Dharma talk. And one of the things I may have even referred to this in that talk, it's quite likely, but I didn't know the sutta, and in fact the sutta wasn't really available widely at that point. But it's probably an image that you've heard before, and I talk about it fairly regularly. And it's the one of the tuning the lute as a metaphor for a balanced energy. So just for fun, I'll bring in the story that's the background of this this teaching. That it starts out with the Buddha is dwelling on the what's called Vulture's Peak. And apparently, it's a place you can visit too. It's in Rajgir in India. In the suttas, it's called Rajagaha. And he's up there, and then this monk named Sona is in the cool grove, wherever that is. He's you know, somewhere down, not up on the in Vulture Peak. And Sona is sitting there. Apparently Sona was pretty wealthy before he was a monk. So he's meditating. He's a monk at this time. And he says, I'm one of the Blessed One's most energetic disciples, yet my mind has not been liberated. So you know, he's getting frustrated. He's like, I've been working hard, but it's not happening for me. And then he says, now there is wealth in my family. It is possible for me to enjoy my wealth and do meritorious deeds. Let me then give up the training and return to the lower life, the lay life, so I can enjoy my wealth and do meritorious deeds. So he's thinking about quitting being a monk. And in the sutta, the Buddha reads his mind. So it's like the vibe goes out. The Buddha's like, wait a minute, there's a disturbance in the force. It's, you know, Sona is thinking about quitting being a monk. So the Buddha, like, we're mixing all our sci-fi here. Well, Star Trek and Star Wars. I mean, he beams down, you know. Those are the only two sci-fi things I know anything about, and I know very little about either. So the Buddha shows up and he starts this inquiry with Sona. He comes down, he says, I was reading your mind. This is what you were thinking, right? And Sona's like, yeah. Buddha's like, okay, tell me, Sona, in the past, when you lived at home, weren't you skilled at the lute? Yes, Bhante. What do you think, Sona? When its strings were too tight, was your lute well tuned and easy to play? No, Bhante. When its strings were too loose, was your lute well tuned and easy to play? No, Bhante. But Sona, when its strings were neither too tight nor too loose, but adjusted to a balanced pitch, was your lute well tuned and easy to play? Yes, Bhante. So too, Sona, if energy is aroused too forcefully, this leads to restlessness. And if energy is too lax, this leads to laziness. Therefore, Sona, resolve on a balance of energy, achieve evenness of the spiritual faculties, and take up the object there. Yes, Bhante. So the Buddha leaves, beams back up to Vulture Peak, and then Sona balances his energies, and the rest is history, becomes enlightened, as one does when the Buddha gives you teachings. So, I know I had heard that teaching on retreats, probably several times. It's like one. I mean, I don't think even the fact that I'm a musician was particularly important in my remembering it, but it might not have hurt. It's just such a, it's such a nice way of talking about balancing energy, right? Don't tune the instrument too tight. Don't tune it too loose. First of all, it aligns with the idea of the middle way in Buddhism, right? Which is sort of a key aspect. And but it also is, it doesn't tell you how to do that, right? It just says do it, right? Don't do too much, don't do, and what it really requires is that we are really attentive to the quality of our effort moment by moment. There's no easy formula here. It's not just, breathe in, breathe out, or say these words, or create this image in your mind. It's pay attention to what the quality of your effort is in any moment. Notice if you're getting restless. Oh, if I'm restless, maybe I'm striving too much. If I'm falling asleep, maybe I'm not making enough effort. And then on top of that, well, what is effort? This is like really even more difficult question to answer. What is effort in meditation? Jeez, why did I have to ask that question? I'm not sure I've ever asked that. Like, it's lurked in the back of my mind, but I don't think I've ever put it out, like, even for myself to consider, because it's almost too scary to think about. You see these instructions, the monks to be ardent and resolute, and we know what, like, the Buddha was like, okay, I'm going to starve myself and then I'll become enlightened, and I'm going to hold my breath, and did all these radical ascetic practices. And so I think, well, my little get up in the morning and meditate for 45 minutes isn't exactly, abandoning all, sensual pleasure and living in the woods under a tree, Is my effort really even qualify as effort? So, I can turn that into another form of self-judgment, always popular. But so the but these I think to come back to this question, what is effort? I think this is another thing that can't necessarily be, certainly can't be quantified, and and maybe can't even be described as only, it's only can be felt. And so when I'm meditating, particularly if I'm falling asleep and I think I need to make more effort, there's nothing effortful that I do, really. I mean, because it makes it sound like, oh, I'm falling asleep. I'll just really sit up straight and stay. I'll just push through. And that doesn't work. It's not real. So what? Yeah, there's a couple things I do. I do usually adjust my posture. That's an effort. Sit up a little straighter. And I open my eyes if I'm falling asleep. But there are plenty of times when neither of those things is effective that I continue to fall asleep. What works, in my experience, is to just keep sitting. That, and you experience this on retreats, that, and it maybe in the often enough in the course of a single sitting, you can fall asleep, and if you don't give up, the energy comes back up, because energy is impermanent. It comes and goes, and so that's a really interesting experience to have, because you sit and you realize, okay, the effort here was not sort of energetic or striving. It was the effort to not stop, which is the same effort of recovery. When it's not like, oh, I've really got my recovery down now. I don't have any problems in my life because I'm sober. No, I just don't drink. I don't, and as a meditator, I just don't stop meditating. I just stay with the path. I stay with the process. And what happens on retreats is that your energy comes and goes, and maybe you are falling asleep for a whole sit. That's happened to me plenty of times. It happens to me at home. But then, the next sitting, you'll have energy, or the one after that, and it just, and you see that it's just by, the thing is to not go to bed. Basically, when you're falling asleep, don't go to bed. That to me is the effort on a retreat, to deal with sleepiness on a retreat. With restlessness, it's very much the same thing, which is don't get up, don't stop, because restlessness makes you want to get up. And it's also sometimes they say, well, do some walking meditation. Fine. That's not practicing, right? But if you're like, oh, I got to get out of here, like, oh, let me just go, read a book, check my email or whatever, just don't stop. No, just keep sitting. Can you sit with that energy? And so both of these, whether it's restlessness or sleepiness, cause aversion, right? They are unpleasant. And the tendency with the unpleasant is to avoid it, to try to get away from it, to push it away. And the challenge, the effort to make and practice is not to do anything about that, but actually to not do anything, to be with it, to accept it. And yeah, I mean, to if you can investigate restlessness and sleepiness, that's one of the most effective ways to actually transform them. All right. So I'm going to talk about one more sutta, which is a little more, well, it's also, got its own sort of poetic quality that. And I think, one of the reasons I like these two suttas is that they are very evocative. They're stories that can stay in your mind. The idea of the lute or the guitar or the violin, the instrument being tuned too tight or too loose, that's an easy image to keep to remember. So this other one is actually, so just for your information, that sutta, and I see that Monica put a link to it. It is from the Sona Sutta, Sona is Sona, is from the Anguttara Nikaya, which is the numerical discourses, and it's chapter six, the chapter of the sixes, the 55th sutta, so 655 in the Anguttara Nikaya. So this sutta is the very first sutta in the Samyutta Nikaya, which is the connected discourses. And that's frankly why I found it, because I had this collection. It had newly been published, and I took it with me. Well, I thought it was newly published. Apparently not. It was published in 2000, but this. I had it with me when I was teaching a retreat, and I know that that retreat was no earlier than 2004, so I probably had it sitting around for a while because it's so intimidating and I hadn't really gotten into it. So while I was teaching this retreat, I just opened it up. Well, I'll just read the first sutta. And in it, the Buddha is at Sabbatijeti's Groves, Anathapindika's Park, familiar place. When the night had advanced, a certain devata of stunning beauty, illuminating the entire Jetis Grove, approached the Blessed One. So it's like this heavenly creature, this, well, I think of them as angels. They call them devas or devatas. Comes to speak to the Buddha, which in and of itself is kind of interesting. It's one of the things that we see in the suttas that supposedly even these heavenly beings look for the Buddha's wisdom. And the deva says, "How did sir, dear sir," calling the Buddha dear sir, "how, dear sir, did you cross the flood?" And by crossing the flood, we mean how did you become enlightened, essentially. "By not holding, friend, and by not straining, I crossed the flood." "But how is it, dear sir, that by not holding and by not straining, you crossed the flood?" "When I came to a standstill, friend, then I sank. But when I struggled, then I got swept away. It is in this way, friend, that by not halting and by not straining, I crossed the flood." So that's the whole teaching. It's very simple, but it's actually the exact same teaching as this Sona Sutta. By not halting and by not straining. And this one, I think, is particularly relevant because it points to exactly what I was just talking about, not halting, right? Just continuing. And then the way the Buddha just expands on that when he says, when I came to a standstill, then I sank. When I just didn't try, then I just sank. When I struggled, I got swept away. It's like, if you get caught in a riptide, right? They tell you, don't try to swim against the riptide, Let it just carry you out until it fades, and then you swim sideways and swim back to shore. But if you struggle, you'll just get pulled under. You can't fight it. So this is, obviously this is an image of water, and it says the flood, but I think of it much more as a river. How do you? Like, or a riptide, if you will. So, but very simple. It's just such a simple sutta, and yet it captures this idea of a balanced effort by not straining and by not halting across the flood. So Those are teachings that I feel capture this sort of intuitive experience of effort in meditation. The classical teaching that I mentioned at the beginning, the four great efforts, are they don't have that intuitive quality. They have, and it's sort of this flip side, kind of like left and right brain. The four great efforts are the effort to avoid unarisen, unwholesome states. Or how do they say that? To avoid unwholesome states that have not arisen. So don't let anything negative even start. That's one. Two is abandon arisen unwholesome states. So if something unwholesome has come into the mind, let it go. Third one is cultivate unarisen wholesome states. So you're in a neutral mind state and you try to cultivate loving kindness, or you cultivate compassion, or you cultivate concentration. And the fourth is maintain arisen wholesome states. So you've got some loving kindness going, or you've got some concentration going. Now just keep it going. So it's avoid if it hasn't come up, abandon it if it has, if it's unwholesome, cultivate it if you don't have something positive, and maintain it if you have something positive. Now this is, this is what we do. I mean, we can, I would say that avoiding, to me, is the trickiest one. I would just generally say that our meditation practice is meant to build up the protection that helps us to not have these unwholesome things arise. But the other three are actually very much what we do. We let go, we abandon the unwholesome. That's a lot of what we're doing in meditation. We're sitting and we're, oh, there's another judgmental thought, there's another fantasy, there's another, plan. Come back to the breath. That's abandoning, simple, right? Cultivating, just by sitting down and trying to be mindful, you're cultivating mindfulness, and you're cultivating concentration as well, and you're cultivating right effort. So just the basics of meditation are cultivation. And then maintaining, I'd say, one and four are the two hardest, because maintaining is very difficult. The mind doesn't tend to stay stable for long. It takes quite a bit of practice to get to a point where we can actually maintain. But we do maintain for at least a few breaths at a time, maybe. So this has such a, I mean, it's funny to me, because it always feels like a completely different thing from this, the sona, this with the strings, and the deva with the not halting and not straining. It's more to me a description of what we do rather than a guidance on how to do it, if that makes sense. We sort of, this is like what you're taught to do, let go, bring up wholesome qualities, try to sustain your concentration. That's just basically what we're doing. But it's not giving you that kind of, oh yeah, how do I balance that? We can say that what it shares with both those teachings, because both of those teachings are about balancing, right? One is about don't, tighten the strings or loosen the strings too much. There's a tight and there's a loose. And the other one is don't struggle and don't halt. And this is divided up into the wholesome or the unwholesome and the wholesome. Avoid, abandon the unwholesome, cultivate, maintain the wholesome. So there's similarly, there's this balance here, but it just, it takes like a different tack on how that balance is achieved. So that seems like more than enough on right effort. We have some time left if people want to chime in with anything on this topic. So thank you for your attention. Oh, and you managed to find the four great efforts too there. Good for you. I wonder where that is. Anybody want to comment? Aaron, go ahead. You can do it. I believe in you. Unfortunately, I do not have the power to unmute you. All I can do is ask to you to unmute. There you
If you were
go.
asking
I got
assessment,
it.
I was trying to look up the where I got the four right efforts. It's from Inside Meditation. I think it's South Bay.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Aaron.
Thank you, Kevin. Great meditation and topic. I just wanted to share something with you and the group. And I'm wondering if what happened in my meditation was finding the middle way. And what happened is I was meditating for about 20 minutes. Honestly, I was doing nothing. I was just, okay, I'm breathing, I'm relaxing, I'm following my breath. And I did that for 20 minutes or a little more because it felt good. I didn't have emotions. There were not a bunch of thoughts. I opened my eyes, and I swear, for the first time in my life, I'm a year sober. First time in my life, I felt absolutely desireless. I wanted nothing. I looked around like, man, that orange tree is gorgeous. It was like psychedelic almost. And I kept looking around, and everything was perfect, including this pergola that I had, which I don't have anymore. I was like, it's okay, everything's great. Was that middle way? Was that like not striving? Because I wasn't doing anything. I felt like I wasn't doing anything.
That's great. I mean, I don't know, I don't think it's we need to characterize. I mean, for me to give it some, imprimatur of, yes, that's now you're enlightened. I mean, you're tasting what we'd call like the fruits of practice. And that's a really lovely and vital thing to experience, to realize like sometimes things just kind of click and when you're doing this practice and there and it really does open up these precious mind states. And to that, it's really beneficial to know that this practice really does ha have this potential. A and it's, we have to be very careful that we don't start to sort of, first of all, like become attached to that, like, oh, I'm going to try to get that back. I'll try to have that experience again. But even to think, okay, I've achieved something, or this is good meditation, and then when I'm spacing out, it's bad meditation. But just to really enjoy it and recognize, yeah, this is the potential of this practice, and it is, yeah, pointing to, I mean, you might call it equanimity, and yeah, the middle way is a path of equanimity. That is a state of not being caught in either desire or aversion, as you're describing, and just being fully present. When the mind is not being pulled in one direction or another, we have a more distinct and clear experience of reality, which is what you're describing. Like in other words, your senses become heightened because they aren't being clouded by being pulled to wanting or not wanting. And so it's like experiencing a very natural state, right? It doesn't feel like an altered state. Like it doesn't feel like you're high in the sense of, you don't feel woozy or anything. It's very natural. And it's kind of like, oh, this is sort of like human existence when it's unfettered by the grasping and aversion. So it's lovely.
Thank you.
Yeah. Keep going.
Every day.
Yeah. Very good. Any other? Oh, yeah. Sharon. Hi. You need to unmute.
There, I'm
Yep.
back. Hello, good to see
Hi.
you. A great talk on effort. I have been going through, it's been almost a year now. What I can see after the talk today has been a long effort, of trying to. I was injured emotionally by, a very painful interaction with my stepson a year ago last May. And I wrote my immediate reaction, or not immediate, but after a few days, was to just say, this was hurtful. I feel wounded and I need to take time, to heal. But I do want to reconcile. So that was, a year ago. And I was able, along the way, most of my effort was to abandon the visceral memory of replaying the wound, of hurting from the wound, because I couldn't move forward, as long as I was reliving this wound. And taking it to now, over time, and certainly the retreat, the 4-day retreat, was so helpful in, really letting the painful images, cultivating wholesome thoughts and experiences during the retreat, really allowed me to clean. Like I could let it go. I could let that go. It was like a bad, a horror movie or something. You keep remembering. And just this last week, I got to the point where I was open enough that I wanted to make an effort to heal our relationship. I was had healed myself, and I didn't know whether I didn't have any expectations, but I had the desire to write something really simple. I've been thinking about it for a long time, and on a walk when I was meditating, just the words came, came to me, and they were simple. It was, I've been thinking of you and thinking of you fondly, and I hope we can find a way to make peace between us. And I wrote it, it was longhand, and I had picked a little card that I found that said exhale, and it was a little beach, where things were calm and happy. And I immediately, I wrote it, I put it in in that envelope, and I put a stamp on it, and I just dropped it in the mail. I haven't heard anything. I don't know if it's had any effect, but I'm feeling like, okay, whatever happens, I have no control over what happens. I let go. It's like a little carrier pigeon or something, went out there. So it really helped me to see it in that the stages, the four efforts that I actually, this whole process has been, okay, I see this unwholesome, and I'm actually kind of indulging in it. And then I finally let it go. And then the effort is to imagine, or cultivate a state of mind where I might be able to take a right action. And anyway, so today was so helpful because I just thought, you know what? This is a sort, this is a, not an achievement, but this is actually an experience that's taken me someplace I haven't been. This is, a difficult life experience. And
Yeah.
I've never really done that. I've never been able to watch it and do it and see myself learning ways to have, right action, right effort. Anyway, so I'm feeling really happy. It's a beautiful spring day. I've been in the
Yeah.
garden and I'm feeling happy. And it was very helpful just to see and sort of say to myself, okay, you're learning. Keep going. Anyway,
Lovely.
good to be with everyone this morning.
Yeah, thanks, Sharon. That's a great story, and I do think it's interesting. I mean, first of all, yeah, I think it's very reaffirming when we see that, oh, I'm actually acting just the way the Buddha said, like to do. I'm making right effort around this issue. And the other thing that strikes me about it is, I love the way you just kind of were like, this is the right thing to do, and you just sort of went ahead and did it. It sounds like without like, oh, questioning, doubting, whatever. It's like, no, this feels right. And sometimes that difficult, what can be difficult, that difficult step, that once we are clear about it, to just go ahead and do it, without sort of second thoughts, is wise, and to trust that intuition that this is the right thing to do. I mean, once again, the Buddha kind of let his brilliance in like taking things apart. He has this remarkable ability to deconstruct reality and behavior and thinking and experience, and help us to understand how it works, and then hopefully to apply that understanding in useful ways. So that's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Steve, one more before we say adieu.
Before you say goodbye.
Yes.
Good morning, Kevin. Good morning,
Good
Helen.
morning, Steve.
The very first thing that came to mind when I was enjoying when you were talking about effort, and there was a smile on your face, and oh, what is effort? And the very first thing that came to my mind was that for me, the more effort I put into trying to figure things out and to know if I'm doing something right or wrong, the more confused I get and the less direction I find. And now with practice, 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 just showing up, the less effort I put into trying to figure it all out, the more that comes.
Yeah.
And so that for me, it just says, well, we don't have to make so much effort. Just allow this to be and just to sit and see what comes and see what happens. And yeah, after this last retreat, some just wonderful things are happening in my life, and yeah, I'm just not striving so much, and making the effort to think about, all right, don't think you have to get all this stuff done right away. Just take this section and go to the next section the next day. The less effort I put in, the better my life seems to be going. So that's just the first thing that came to my mind.
Yeah.
It's really fun watching you smile about effort.
It's funny, isn't it? And of course, speaking of, Star Wars, there's the famous line, there is no try. I don't even watch Star Wars. I just get to find these hear these things from but if because of course, right, like trying to meditate right away. When someone says, I'm trying to meditate, I'm like, okay, like you already have a problem. I don't want to say you're doing it wrong, but it's just like, and how about like, I'm trying to stay sober? Like, well, what does that mean? That means it probably means you're not succeeding, right? Staying sober is not drinking. Like, just don't do that. Meditating is just sit down and be there, and yeah, it's great if you have some forms to work with, whether it's breath or loving kindness or something, but it's just showing up. Showing up is recovery, showing up is Dharma practice.
Very interesting, that whole concept of effort.
Yeah, and we make it more complicated in a way. Well, part of this, maybe I'll wrap up with this, is that we want there to be a system. And this is like the very Western materialistic view of life and of the mind. Like, oh, I just need to figure out how to do it. Just tell me how to do it. Like, where's the user manual? And because we want to like take control of our minds, we want to be able to, okay, oh, there's this thing called peace or serenity or mindfulness. How do I do that? Give me the instructions. It's like, well, there's no how. It's just like there's no try. It's just put in the time, just create, like we talk about on retreat, the container, and then practice within that. Don't drink or use, no matter what. How do you stay sober? Don't drink or use. And then, great. Have a community. Have a sponsor. Have work the steps. All of that. But all of that's not how you stay sober. How you stay sober is by not drinking and using. That's so. I rant, therefore I am. So. Speaking of materialistic views of the world, Descartes. Anyway, thank you all for showing up. And at least Monica will have an easy na time deciding what the title of this talk is. Because I get, when I put these things up on YouTube and on my podcast, I'm like, it was something I talked about last month, and I don't, I'm like, what did I talk about? And you have these cryptic notes, and I'm like, what does she mean? I'll wind up like listening to it sometimes, but like, yeah,
Well,
it's fun.
sorry about that. I
Oh,
put
it's not your
everything
fault.
I know. I'm trying to figure out. Well, and also just those are just like little bullet
Yeah,
points,
exactly. You grab little things, and they sometimes remind me exactly. Oh yeah, right. But at least for once,
Yeah,
we've
I
got
think
it.
last week I was at a loss. I was like,
I know, really. I know. Well, last week I was at a loss, as I recall. So
Well, it's okay. It's okay because
Too much effort.
too much
Too
effort,
much
and
effort. Thank you, Steve. Yes.
yeah.
You're tuning your strings too tight. Yeah.
Yes, there you go.
You
All
know what
right.
happens when we tune too tight? They
Ping!
break.
I
Yeah.
know, it's nasty.
Bang
And
the
then you
drum
don't have
softly.
another one and you have to go to the store and buy a whole set.
I know,
Yeah.
and you just want to replace your G,
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, everybody. Nice to see
Enjoy
you
this
all.
beautiful warm day, 87 degrees today, and then 66 and rain tomorrow.
Yeah, we're going to get the old atmospheric river coming, so, oh
You
well.
next week.
Everything is
Great for the
impermanent.
burn scars.
Yeah,
Okay.
there's that.
It's
Bye-bye.
impermanent. Okay.
Yep.
Blessings,
Bye. Thank
everyone.
you.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks,
Yep.
Monica.
Bye-bye.
Bye.